Hello, this is Chris Yerkes reading to you from the September 18th edition of the County Chronicle. We'll start with the first page stories. Villa Grove School Board, Bullying Concerns Draw a Big Crowd to Meeting by Gabriella Agius. The Villa Grove School Board drew a packed house on September 16th. After a recent incident, many parents had concerns about how they should be notified if their student is either a victim of bullying or a bully themselves. The reported details of the incident are as follows. The incident occurred on Friday, September 6th, during the fourth period rotation. Student A and Student B were having a conversation. Student A told Student B that they were going to snap if classmates kept being mean to them. Student B told several students that Student A was going to snap. During interchanging of the classes after fourth period, students notified Teacher 1 of Student A having a notebook with horrible pictures. The Teacher 1 retrieved the notebook and looked over it with Principal Sarah Jones and Teacher 2 in the office. No images were found, nor was anything out of the ordinary. A page with student names on it was removed from the notebook. During lunch, Student B notified Teacher 3, who was on lunch duty, that Student A was going to shoot up the school. Teacher 3 notified Mrs. Jones, who called the school resource officer, SRO. Mrs. Jones and the SRO took Student A into the office to discuss the notebook and alleged statement. Student A said nothing about shooting up the school or harming students. There was no hit list. Their parents were notified of the situation as well as precautionary steps to take. At 12:03 p.m., Student C texted her mother that Student A had a hit list and was going to shoot up the school. This was unbeknownst to faculty and staff. The office received a call from the parent asking if they should call 911. The secretary did not know what the parent was talking about and let them know there was no school emergency. Principal Jones emailed all the teachers to let them know that there was no emergency and to reassure students that there was no threat. There was no talk the rest of the day, and Jones met with the junior high staff to discuss the events of fourth period after school. Over the weekend, social media posts continued to spread along with misinformation, according to the board. Late Saturday morning, the district issued a statement that there was no credible threat to the school. On Sunday afternoon, a second threat was perceived after a second list was posted to a student group chat. This list was made by two junior high students based on what was heard from others. This was a guess at who they thought was on the initial list. The threat assessment team, a weekend officer, and the police chief met to discuss the incident, and a joint statement was issued Monday afternoon. This was reassuring to the public that there was no threat to safety. The timeline and clarification was given in response to misinformation being spread online. Several parents addressed their concerns with the board. Many of the parents who spoke to the board were concerned about the level of bullying and the lack of communication to the parents. The parents felt the administration would contact parents whose child was being bullied, but not the bully's parents. One parent whose child was on the alleged list was disappointed that the district failed to let her know her child was engaged in bullying. She wished she had known so she could correct her behavior. Many of the parents were frustrated with the lack of consistency in response to bullying. Parents felt the punishments were not equal, that many students were given too many chances before action was taken. Both the board and the parents agreed that this incident has shown that improvements can be made. In other business, the board held a public hearing in regard of e-learning. E-learning would be implemented on cold weather days. This hearing was to give the board the options to use e-learning but not require it. For elementary, e-learning days would be used for enrichment and recovery. Since elementary students don't have one-to-one Chromebooks, they would be given a choice of activities. For junior high and high school, they would have access to their own Chromebooks. So it would be up to the teacher's discretion if e-learning would be used for review or continuation of previous study. It is unlikely these days would be used for new learning. Zoom synchronous learning would not likely be an option due to the instability of the internet some teachers and students may experience. The board approved e-learning plan. It must now go to the regional board for implementation. The board was also visited by Omni Energy Partners. They reported that almost all of the summer improvement projects are wrapped up minus minor window work. Omni notified the board that they received the Energy for Education grant from the Department of Energy. Omni was awarded $15 million to invest in 9 different districts in order to improve facilities. Over 200 teams submitted for the grant and only 16 received it. Villa Grove is eligible to receive almost $2 million to assist with improvement projects. According to Board President Jim Clark, this is huge for the district. This grant will help move along many projects slated on the 5-year plan. High school graduation is set for May 25th, 2025. The next article from the Villa Grove City Council. Union Pacific's Big Boy, a treat for local folks. The Villa Grove City Council reflected on the Union Pacific 1404 Big Boy locomotive overnight stay in Villa Grove this past week, with Public Works Director Mark McSell saying it had gone well. Mayor Cassandra Arisol-Gunder called for approval of the consent agenda. Included was an authorization of the payment of bills in the amount of $268,000. Also included were the approval of financial reports for the month ending July 31st and formal approval of purchase of the fire truck from the Bonneville Fire Corporation. Public Works Director McSell noted that the Harrison Street Bridge project was nearing completion, with work expected to be completed on Friday, September 20th. He also reported that Cross Construction will be replacing 8 to 12 blocks of water main in the coming weeks at locations around Villa Grove. He added that Cross had contracted a private crew for property restoration after the water work is complete. Police Chief Robert Ree then reported that UP had contacted him requesting two police officers to provide security for the Big Boy locomotive, and they would be compensated the city for overtime. Ree, who was in the process of transitioning to his new position at the community center, reported that he had been in communication with the VFW to move annual Halloween contest to the community center. He also noted that the splash pad fixtures had been taken down for the winter and that a verbal agreement had been reached with CU Plumbing to winterize, open the splash pad in the future. Louis Van Sieg was on hand to support variance requests from Hudson Gas to include home-based businesses. Administrator Jackie Athey then made her report, stating that she was working with an auditor on several follow-up issues, mostly related to IMRF data. She also added that at a recent county economic development meeting, it was announced that the long-awaited Cronus Chemical LLC and hydrous ammonia production facility would be breaking ground soon. The project is expected to bring 1,500 to 2,000 construction workers to the area during construction, with 200 permanent positions being added once production begins. Finally, she noted that she had fielded myriad phone calls regarding the Union Pacific Big Boy overnight stay in town. Mayor Arisol-Gunter then made her report, stating that it was an honor for UP to have the Big Boy stay in town overnight. She also thanked the Ag Days Committee for providing tables and chairs that were used in anticipation of the locomotive's arrival. Burns, Clancy & Associates employee Jubal Underwood then addressed the council to discuss the east-west road at the north side of Pheasant Point subdivision. He noted that it would be directly aligned with the east-west road at the north side of the Prairie Fire subdivision that is in the planning stages. He also suggested the city run water and sewer mains to the north as part of the project to prepare for future development. Council then moved unanimously to new business, approving the ordinance variations for Harrison Gas at 701 South Sycamore Street for a home-based firearms repair and restoration business, and for American Waste Storage at 308 South Spruce for mini storage warehouses. The council then approved an ordinance amending Chapter 36, Financing and Revenue Purchasing, of the City of Silla Grove Municipal Code. Next, the council approved an ordinance authorizing the mayor to execute the employment agreement for the position of CPS faculty lead and to accept the resignation of CPS Director Bethany Sorovka. The council then moved to closed session for the discussion of personnel at 7 p.m., returning to open session at 8:26 p.m. Upon returning to open session, the council moved to approve the appointment of interim department heads. The next article, Arcola School Board, Cost Overruns and Delays Frustrate School District, by David Porter. Arcola school officials expressed frustration with progress at some million-dollar locker room upgrades. Cost overruns have exceeded the roughly $12,000 contingency allowance as delays continue. Light fixtures that were to go into the boys' locker room don't fit after it was found that the drawings on the table didn't match the reality on the floor. A slope ceiling, measurement assumptions, and wireless electric box were some of the reasons attributed to the costs and delays. Apparently, there was an electrical junction box with circuit breakers in place, so there was an assumption that power was available there. When the box was opened up, there was no wiring to the non-functioning breakers. The project manager said that there were always unknown issues with the remodel. He added that smaller lights that would have worked have been found, and even more resistant to vandalism than the original ones. They're rated for use in prisons. However, there's a 90-day lead time because they have to be manufactured after the order is placed. Dr. Tom Mulligan, superintendent, said it's frustrating. The project is already taking longer than expected, and now it's 90 more days to get light fixtures. School board president Lucas Schankweiler said the list of changes seemed to be long to me. He suggested that some of the cost overruns should be shared by the management company. We can have that conversation, the project manager said. During the public comment portion of the meeting last Wednesday, Maiken Gomez and her father, Mike Gomez, again addressed the Arcola School Board about their hope to have a soccer team at the school or a co-op team with another school, which Arcola does with ALAH for golf. Discussion broke down over an argument about whether the board agreed to reach out to another school and how to get a topic on the board's agenda. President Schonkweiler said, "Just because you asked me to put something on the agenda, they don't have to. The agenda could be miles long. You've given your 5 minutes to say in peace, and that's how it works." Mike Gomez then questioned whether there should be two Schonkweilers on the board. Besides Lucas, his cousin Jeremy is a board member. "We were both elected by the people," Lucas Schonkweiler said, "and it's not against the law." He then shut down the conversation. "Thank you, you've had your time this evening." Mulligan then introduced new teachers to the board. Only three of the five could make the meeting. The board approved an overnight field trip for the FFA and fundraisers for the 2024-25 school year. They approved closing some bank accounts and moving funds to other accounts. Mulligan said he was trying to clean up the paperwork involved with multiple accounts. Following a closed session, the board accepted the resignation of Terry Vaugh as recess supervisor and approved the employment of Carla Leal as a paraprofessional. The next article, Arcola City Council, hire part-time officer Tissue TIF. Issue TIF statements by Ben Crane. In a 5-minute, 11-second Arcola City Council meeting on Monday night, the council only had to make a decision on one agenda item, the hiring of part-time officer Sean Lane. Lane is a former officer out of Coles County who approached the chief, Nick Suiting, to pick up 1 to 2 days a week. "We desperately need it," said Suiting at the meeting. "Lane will be available to work day and night shifts." Mayor Jesus Garza also handed over a press release to the County Chronicle, a statement on the ongoing TIF about TIF, Tax Increment Financing. It reads, "The City of Arcola extends its sincere appreciation to Tom Mulligan and the Arcola School District for taking a leadership role in the tax increment financing discussion. The City's leadership recognized the City's commitment to ensuring a collaborative approach that benefits both the school district and the community. As part of this ongoing cooperation, the City of Arcola is open to negotiating an amended intergovernmental agreement with the local taxing bodies to preserve this valuable resource for the community. The City believes that maintaining the TIF district is essential for future growth, creating new housing opportunities, preserving a historic downtown, and continuing the successful development around the interstate interchange. We are grateful for the school's willingness to engage in this important process," said Jesus Garza, mayor of the City of Arcola. "Working together, we can achieve our shared goals of growth and development for our community." In a separate email from August 26, City Administrator Bill Wagoner reached out to the County Chronicle regarding the TIF. "The TIF Joint Review Board can approve or deny a boundary amendment. It is advisory in nature. The City Council can decide not to take their feedback into consideration when voting. Regardless, the boundary amendment requires a public meeting to start the clock. A joint review board meeting would follow with their report. Then two additional public meetings are required before the council would vote. The process cannot be shorter than 45 days with all of the notification requirements involved. A TIF extension for additional years requires a full approval or proof of no objection from Parkland College, for example, of the taxing bodies for legislative approval. That would require an amended IGA, Intergovernmental Agreement, at this point to extend the TIF-1. TIF-6 has a legislative extension to the 35 years, but would fall under the local IGA, which limited the extension to match the 35-year of TIF-1. The IGA would need to be amended for the full legislative session to allow the proposed boundary amendments to TIF-6. So the path forward has always been the Intergovernmental Agreement. There is no timetable for the next public meeting or hearing regarding the ongoing TIF discussions. The next article, Tuscola paid $34,000 to settle lawsuit regarding a departed police officer by David Porter. Last week's resignation of Tuscola police officer Dalton Donalds follows on the heels of a settlement payout that stemmed from an excessive use of force and unlawful address allegation made just over a year ago. The City of Tuscola's insurer, Illinois Municipal League Risk Management Association, the IMLRMA, paid $34,000 to Michael D. Coombs of Tuscola in an agreement dated August 26. It was noted that the settlement is not an admission of liability and the parties intend merely to avoid litigation. The agreement also states that it is understood and agreed that this settlement is a compromise of the doubtful and undisputed claim. Coombs' lawyer, J. Stephen Beckett, sent a letter dated May 6 threatening a lawsuit against the city. The letter outlined Coombs' version of the events from August 25, 2023, when he was arrested at his home in the 900 block of East Newkirk Street and charged with two felony counts and a misdemeanor for aggravated battery of a police officer, resisting a police officer, and obstructing a police officer. Beckett said the charges were later dismissed. According to Beckett, the confrontation began when Officer Donald saw a group of teens outside their curfew and followed them to the Coombs residence. Beckett said Coombs' daughter was having a sleepover and the kids had asked if they could go to a nearby friend's home to obtain a phone charger and were returning home just past midnight. Donald allegedly knocked on the front door, which was answered by Coombs, who had been lying on the couch in the living room. The officer announced that he was here entering the house, forced open the front door, and entered. He said Coombs asked if the officer had a warrant, and the officer said he did not need a warrant. Coombs then repeatedly told the officer to leave and asked to speak to the officer's supervisor, Beckett said. According to Beckett's letter, Donalds then grabbed Mr. Coombs by the arm and pulled him to the ground on the front porch and sidewalk where he handcuffed him. In physically assaulting Mr. Coombs, the officer injured him on his face, right arm, right shoulder, right chest, the ribs, back, and left lower leg. He received treatment from urgent care. The trauma of the arrest and fear of future retribution from this officer or other officers remains to Mr. Coombs to this day. City officials have made no public comment regarding the allegations. However, in response to a Freedom of Information Act, FOIA, request, the city provided photos that show significant abrasions and bruises to Coombs' face and body. Beckett said Coombs sustained about $1,000 in medical bills, $6,000 in damage to his home, and $4,500 in legal fees. Beckett called Donald's arrest report inaccurate in that it admitted that the officer forced entry into the Coombs' house and assaulted him without any provocation. He said the charges were dismissed in large part due to the lawfully recorded videos taken by the teenagers inside the Coombs home and the unlawful arrest and assault by the officer. He said Coombs did not threaten or resist the officer's use of force and merely asserted his rights as a homeowner to object to the forced entry into his home by the officer. In the letter, Beckett refers to the officer as Dylan Dalton. The settlement letter from IMRMA names Officer Donalds as one of the parties to the agreement. It also states that the day of the incident prompting the settlement is on or about August 23, 2023. In its FOIA request, the County Chronicle asked for any and all complaints regarding Donalds made to the city or the police department. The incident involving Coombs was the only complaint returned under the request. City officers declined multiple requests for comment. Another story, EPA okays Cronus permit by David Porter. Tuscola High School seniors were starting kindergarten when the word Cronus was first heard in the community. News of the pending ammonia and fertilizer plant ebbed and peaked for more than a dozen years. It peaked again this week when the company put out the word that the EPA has granted its construction and air permit, paving the way for the $2.3 billion facility to be built. Local officials are hopeful. Mayor Dan Kleiss says he's still excited about the plant. While the progress has been publicly slow, there's been a lot of work behind the scenes, he said, to keep the project moving forward. He said the companies would not go through these steps if they were not still interested. Those steps included updating options on the property and applying for permits. All of those steps have costs. Just filling out the permit application have a cost, Kleiss said. He looks at Cronus's willingness to do that as a positive sign, especially since Lyondell Bazell closed. He said it'd be nice to get some of those manufacturing jobs back. So, when will the first shovel of dirt be turned? Brian Moody, director of the newly formed Douglas County Economic Development Corporation, the successor to Tuscola's economic development arm, said he will have a better idea in a month or so if the company will be breaking ground soon. He said there's still a few properties that need to have purchase options renewed, but a lot of the groundwork, such as road design, is in place and ready to go. There are still a few hurdles, he said, but he's glad the company was able to put out an update. Speaking of the old Lyondell Bazell property, which has been largely cleared of the buildings and piping that had stood there for more than half a century, Moody was asked whether the property would be suitable for Cronus' use. Moody said the permit applications are specific to the site, so it would not be easy to merely flip over the Lyondell Bay site, which is essentially next door to the proposed Cronus site. There would have to be a lot of work done to determine whether the old chemical site would work for the new one. However, he said there are multiple companies looking at that site as well. While he said he could not discuss specific projects, many of them are promising, he said. He added, I say that about a lot of things. The Cronus project has been promising for nearly 13 years. The company issued a press release through a National Business Service. In the release, the company said the permit approval marks a pivotal moment for the project Cronus. It calls the permits a landmark development for the agricultural industry. We are thrilled to announce the receipt of the EPA construction and air permit, a critical milestone for the project and our commitment to providing reliable, locally produced ammonia, said Erzin Atak, Cronus Chemical CEO. We expect our new plant in the heart of the highest consumption region in the country will alleviate the shortage as well as the increasing supply concerns of local farmers and industrial users. The release included a quote from Illinois Governor J.B. Pritzker. With its strategic position and state-of-the-art technology, Cronus Chemicals is supporting our local farmers by producing ammonia, a more sustainable fertilizer, said Pritzker. This development not only strengthens the agricultural sector in central Illinois, but also paves the way for further innovation and expansion in the sustainable fertilizer sector, an essential part of Illinois' plan for a greener future. Following behind the governor's comment was an indicator that Cronus plans to use union labor to build its plant. We're excited to see Cronus Chemicals reach this significant milestone, said Josh McElvray, president of Lincoln Land Building Trades Union. He said Cronus and the North American Building Trades Union signed an agreement. We look forward to providing the necessary skilled labor force to make this important project a reality, said McElvray. Cronus said demand for ammonia continues to outpace the supply in the U.S. Project Cronus directly addresses this growing demand with an annual production capacity of 950,000 short tons of ammonia, positioning plant as a key player in national and global fertilizer markets. Tuscola was selected as a site for Cronus due to its Midwest agricultural location, as well as access to the interstate highway system, rail lines, and natural gas lines. The multinational company will use UHDE ThyssenKrupp Industrial Solutions technology to build the facility. ThyssenKrupp is a respected German company. Entering the U.S. market with a major product like Cronus Chemicals is a massive opportunity for our family and Keytrade AG. We're proud to create jobs for the great state of Illinois, said Malik Heyman, chairman and majority shareholder of Cronus. For more about Cronus Chemical and the people behind it, visit https://cronuschem.com. We'll move now to the obituaries. Carol Ann Huckstep, 58, of Tuscola, formerly of Arcola, passed away at 11:13 a.m. on Saturday, September 14, 2024, at her residence. Private family services will be held at a later date. The Edwards Funeral Home is assisting with arrangements. Jaime Bigarza, 91, of Arcola, passed away at 10:55 a.m. on Saturday, September 14, 2024, at his daughter's home in Charleston, surrounded by family. Funeral services were held Tuesday, September 17th at the Edwards Funeral Home, Arcola. Pastor Valdemar Perez Lopez officiated. Burial will be in the Del Roble Cemetery in Monterrey, Nuevo León, Mexico. Visitation was held Tuesday, September 17th, prior to the funeral at the cemetery home. James Richard Hawkins, age 46, cherished son, brother, uncle, fiancé, grandson, nephew, and friend, passed away suddenly on August 8th, 2024 in Shenzhen, China. A private family burial and celebration will take place in Tuscola on September 21st. In lieu of flowers, memories in James's name can be made to the Save the Music Foundation. Martha L. Chup Otto, 84, of Humboldt, passed away at 5:15 a.m. on Sunday, September 15, 2024, at her daughter's home, surrounded by her family. Funeral services were held Wednesday morning, September 18th, at the Otto Center, south of Arthur. Bishop Lamar Miller officiated. Beryl was in the Yoder Cemetery in rural Arthur. Visitation was Monday, September 16th and Tuesday, September 17th, all at the Otto Center. The Edwards Funeral Home assisted with the arrangements. Robert L. Hallett, 78, of Danville, formerly of Villa Grove, passed away on Thursday, September 12, 2024 at OSF St. Joseph Medical Center in Bloomington. A graveside service will be held at 1:30 p.m. on Wednesday, September 18th at the Centennial Cemetery in Villa Grove. Another article, Heilig Restores Tuscola's Historic Coca-Cola Mural by Ben Crane. When the faded Coca-Cola mural on the side of Tuscola's iconic Candy Kitchen building needed restoration, local artist and owner of Vintage Karma, Ainsley Hellick, took on the challenge of bringing it back to its former glory. The mural, which dates back to the 1920s, was originally painted by the Thomas Cusack Company, a prominent Chicago-based billboard firm that dominated the Midwest in the early 20th century. It was painted in probably like, I don't know, when the first original was, but the photo that I based it off was from the 1920s, Hylik explained. Thomas Cusack, the Thomas Cusack Company, created billboards from the early 1900s. The city of Tuscola decided to fund the mural's restoration, tapping Hylik for the project. As an experienced muralist, Hylik was eager to take on the task of preserving this important piece of local history. The owner, Devin, wanted to have it redone, so we had a We actually had talked a couple of years ago at this point about doing it, Heilig said. The good thing is the city was willing to pay to get the mural redone. In order to ensure historical accuracy, Heilig reached out to Coca-Cola for access to their original style guides and branding specifications. After some persistence, a Coca-Cola representative was able to provide the necessary files, though with strict conditions. It was really interesting. It was a very explicit understanding that this is for this project only, and I'm to delete these files from my computer, Heilig said. Heilig's attention to detail paid off as the restored mural now stands as a vibrant tribute to Tuscola's past. Beyond just beautifying the downtown area, the project holds personal significance for the artist. I'm a lifelong Coca-Cola drinker. I mean, that's my beverage of choice. So for me, I had a little bit of emotional stake, and to make it sure it was done well and done right, Heilig explained. With the success of this restoration, Heilig hopes to collaborate with the city on future mural projects that can further enhance Tuscola's cultural identity and appeal to visitors. It's just kind of just a different way to get my art out there, and hopefully the community will be receptive to some of the ideas and try and do things in a more well-thought-out, clever way, Heilig said. Article: Last of the Big Boys passes through county. Union Pacific's Big Boy steam locomotive drew crowds throughout Douglas County last week when it stayed overnight in Villa Grove and then chugged through Tuscola and Arthur on its way to St. Louis by Tony Hooker. For Ed Dickens, like most of the team he oversees as manager of heritage operations for the Union Pacific Railroad, the care and upkeep it has taken to restore the maintained locomotive number 4014, Big Boy, has been a labor of love. Dickens, who hails from Cheyenne, Wyoming, where Big Boy is kept when not riding American rails, says that his fascination with trains started when he was a boy. If you look in the crowd, you see those young boys and girls dressed like train people. That was me, he recalled. The manager, who has worked for Union Pacific for 36 years, is quick to answer when asked why the locomotive holds such sway over the public imagination. It's three things, really. It's the year 2024, and you can see the world's largest steam locomotive rolling through your town, he said of the crowds of people who flooded into Villa Grove to catch a glimpse. It's also an amazing piece of history, especially with its size and background. And finally, it's the fact that it is fully functional. Speaking of that functionality, took Dickens and a crew of 10 men, many of whom continue to serve as crewmen to this day, 2.5 years to completely restore the massive mechanical marvel, which had originally been built in the 1940s to serve the U.S. government during World War II. Union Pacific allowed us to do it, Ed stated. They wanted us to do it for the very specific reason of public and community relations. It's an outstanding opportunity. Just look what it does. Dickens was quick to point out that the Big Boy serves to connect the history of all the communities along the line and to remind people of the vital role that railroads have played throughout the history of the USA. He stated that even though people think of railroads as being old-fashioned and slow, nothing could be further from the truth because of the tonnage that they are able to convey across the country. Just because they're kind of operating in the background of our life does not diminish the important role that they play, he exclaimed. It might seem obvious, but Dickens wanted to point out that every move it makes, from the wisps of steam that it emits to the sound of the whistle it makes, are all manually controlled, unlike modern locomotives, which, while still being controlled by human beings, have engine and propulsion systems that are essentially more automated to deliver whatever power is needed. Modern locomotives do play a vital role in 4014's travels, however, as they assist the process enough to more than double the 100-mile distance the locomotives were able to travel in their original days. Back then, the steam engines had to have its water supply replenished at least once and often more often along the way during a day's travels. For example, yesterday went 220 miles from Global 3 Rochelle, and at the end of their operating day would find them in a roundhouse like the one that used to be in Villa Grove, where they would be serviced and refueled and served. We don't have that, Dickens noted. We need to make over 220 miles, and the locomotive allows us to do it use its power if we needed to. The biggest contribution of the modern locomotive is at the other end of the journey, however, as they use a system known as dynamic braking to slow down without physically using the mechanical brakes, which are installed on Big Boy. This saves wear and tear on the equipment and makes for a much smoother, better logistics operation, he said, as he prepared to depart Villa Grove on another leg of his journey. And so, briefs, Terry Miller Night. Mark your calendars. Arcola will be celebrating Terry Miller Night at Arcola homecoming football game. Miller is the only Arcola native to have played in the National Football League. He was drafted by the Detroit Lions in 1968 and later signed with the Cardinal football team when he was in St. Louis. And that is all we have time for this week. This is Chris Yerkes saying goodbye and see you again next week.